You are now part of a social experiment.
Welcome to Mastermind, the show where you learn to develop and master your skills from the best of the best. Yes, your host, Mr. G.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Our next guest is a master plumber with his own plumbing company called The Wonderful World of Plumbing. In just a few short years, he's been able to accumulate over $1 million in sales. The Wonderful World of Plumbing aims to take care of your home and take care of you. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed. Let's welcome today, master plumber, Mr. Damian Bailey, to the program.
Mr. Bailey, hey there, how you doing today? Good. How's everything?
Everything is good, man. Thank you for coming through. Appreciate your time. I know you're super busy, man, with the company and everything. So thanks for taking the time out to speak with us.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You know, I was thinking about your title, The Wonderful World of Plumbing. And I kind of wanted to know, like, where that came from. It's just a really interesting name. So I wanted to know the story behind that. What made you decide to name it that?
Yeah, you know, while researching just plumbing names, a lot of people were using like Damien and Sons, or you know, or their name. They're using a name like Smith's Plumbing, you know, and things like that. So if you were looking down a list of plumbing companies, I wanted it to stand out. We had a saying: whenever we come across something that was really nasty, like if we're cutting open pipes and get a bad smell, or you walk into a nasty situation when it comes to plumbing and sewage, then we kind of shun it off and say, hey, this is the wonderful world of plumbing, you know? the other saying is, okay, that's the smell of money, because people don't want some of these odors in their home, you know?
Right.
So the wonderful world of plumbing just really derived from just being sarcastic when it came down to a dirty situation and just trying to make light of it. If someone said, that's a lot of money to do this, you know, we just say, yeah, but that's the wonderful world of plumbing. You know, I mean, sometimes you do that. So it came out of some just trying to make light out of a potentially dirty or dangerous situation.
Yes, sir. And I think that there's nothing wrong with, like you said, it is the smell of money. And speaking of the smell of money, you know, making over $1 million, a lot of people don't connect certain hands-on jobs with money like that for some reason, but plumbing is one of those things that makes good money. So how much money, like how much a year does the average plumber make? And, you know, what's the money in plumbing?
A lot. Now that's a wide open question. Like when it comes to how much you make, I think when I started, I made around 40,000, and then I quickly moved up to 50,000. But when I started, I knew nothing, and I was just doing an apprenticeship. After the apprenticeship, I became a sponge, you know. So I didn't just do ride-alongs and do educational courses. I would fly myself to different cities and do workshops and do sessions, and I'll talk to other plumbing companies just to kind of just become a sponge and learn it. And I wanted to learn it fast. The reason being is, a guy told me when I first started plumbing, said that you're a little too old for this. I'm 45 right now, and I was 38 when I started. Just to start up a new trade, he was like, you're a little too old. So I took that as a personal challenge to reach where he was and then exceed that. I started off making around 40,000, but I was working about 50 to 60 hours a week. And then I started averaging around 55,000 maybe my second year and my third year. And then after my second year, I went ahead and became licensed with the mastery license, plumbing license. And then after that, it's kind of like the sky's the limit, you know, especially if you own your own company. Now you can make a 100,000, 80,000, 60,000. It really varies. Depending on who you work for, if you're in new construction, if you're in residential, if you're working a commission only, or if you're working hourly. So there's a wide variety, and it depends on where you are geographically.
Got you. That is
but it's good money regardless.
Yeah, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Especially considering that you don't need, a college degree to become a plumber. I think, we see a lot of these things going away in schools with the plumbing, the electrician, and the hands-on work, but the hands-on work is making good money. comparable money to the suit and tie work. So it's really interesting that the schools really don't take time out for those things anymore. I wanted to backtrack and get a little bit about your early life before we get into all the work that you are doing right now. So can you share with us a little bit about, you know, you growing up and some of the influences and things that kind of led you to become the man that you are today?
Let's see. Growing up, first there were three of us in one household. I have more siblings, but in our household, immediate household, there were three of my older brother, Maya, my younger sister, Nicole. Eventually, I had another younger brother come when I was about 13. But we always had the women in our family to look up to, grandmothers, great grandmothers. And they were that glue that kept everyone together. So they it kind of instilled just a strong foundation of family, of being kind to people, just being putting out good energy into the world. So they always gave us positive reinforcements, and then that kind of grew within myself. Growing up, as far as the males in the family, there was struggles with maybe some, I would say, alcoholism. As far as father, grandfather, uncle, just like people that were really close to me. And so I took that the trauma that could have brought, and then just turned it around to where you learn, you don't have to make your own mistakes to move forward. You can learn from others' mistakes, and then you can really become progressive then. But it helped me be wiser to where I did make mistakes. I tried to get in those streets, tried to hustle, tried to sell dope, tried to carry guns, I didn't get in trouble. I was one of the fortunate ones that never got caught up, you know. I was always, academically, I was always smart. And so even when I was trying to hang in the street, I was very calculated with how I moved around and the next move that I made. I was very opposite. I was very, very similar, but very opposite to my older brother, Maya Bailey, who was probably one of my stronger influences. He was always a hot head, quick temper. I always had to kind of bring him out of situation or troublesome situations. But yeah, we're quite similar in so many ways, but then we're very, very different in other ways. And but I think we complement each other greatly, and we respond to each other when we're together. So just growing up, it wasn't terrible. You know, money was an issue always, having money and just having
strong. Was that North Carolina too?
Yeah, in Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay, gotcha.
And just having that a strong male leadership, you know, that was something that was missing. I even remember, you know, you'd be talking around and sitting around with other plumbers. They would say, you know, I'm like, how did you get into plumbing? They're like, oh, my dad used to take me around, you know, whenever he did jobs, and then I just learned, and I'm sitting here like, yo. Me and my dad didn't get cool. We were all right, but we didn't get cool and really on good terms until I was in my mid-20s. I don't want to say it started me at a disadvantage, but it is that he wasn't around. But again, some things that I could have taken advantage of early in life, it happened right later in life.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Another major event in your life was being a teen parent. So what was the situation like with that, man? And how were you able to kind of, you know, come to grips with that and do what you had to do as a father?
Yeah. Becoming the best father I could was really my major goal. And it's like, I don't want to be anything like what I've seen growing up. I don't want to be these dudes, you know? So soon as I found out my girlfriend was pregnant when I was 17, it was like, okay, just to kind of be candid, I have $40 worth of dope left. And so I practically gave that away to somebody else, which I should have probably flushed, but gave it away and then started working at Bojangles. Like, you know what? I have to be here. I have to be around. Worked at Bojangles, worked at Hardee's, and started taking SATs and filling out college applications. And so it's almost like I'm trying to just set myself up so that I can be present and I can be a good example to my son. And so went to A&T shortly thereafter. You know, it's almost like you come home. I came home every weekend or every other weekend. I'm skipping the Cancun trips or spring break in Miami or Myrtle Beach. I don't participate in the homecomings, you know, and Auntie has one of the best homecomings in the world. You know, it's called Jiho, which is like the greatest homecoming on earth. That's the abbreviation for it. But
I've heard about homecomings.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's good energy, man. But and it's really about running back home just so I can be there on the weekends for my sons and just creating an atmosphere to where I can provide for them. It took a lot of sacrifice. A whole lot of sacrifice and a whole lot of struggle, but it was definitely beneficial in the end because now they're of age and they can help me with this business.
Yeah, man. I mean, that is amazing, man, because you do have stories where people are like, yo, I got to hustle harder. You know what I'm saying? I got the kids. I got to get more bricks. You know what I mean? Like, you had the mindset that you wanted to be there, like physically present, alive for your kids. So I think that is definitely amendable, man, because a lot of folks might have been like, yo, I got to get my grind on, man. Like, I got kids now, you know, as opposed to like, I want to be alive. Like, I want to be here and do the right thing. So kudos to you kind of figuring that out early. So what was outside of the kids and everything, what was your experience like at North Carolina A&T and how did that help kind of you develop, you know, as a person?
And it was amazing. So, you know, when you're from a smaller city, that's all you know, you know? So then when I went to A&T, you see Black people, a sea of Black people, you know what I'm saying? And it's not like, you know, it's not like everyone, we know each other. And so it's not like this part of town is versus this part of town. It's just, and we're unified, you know? Of course you can always have altercations and things like that, but we seem unified, way more unified than we are, currently used to, you know. So I became a part of an organization called the History Club, where they taught you about just like Black nationalism and then just Black Panthers, just things I wasn't exposed to, just Blackness, being Black ass, just being, you know what I'm saying? Just everything that teaches you and gears you and puts you in the right direction to appreciate yourself and appreciate your history. And then there was a couple of brothers there that did poetry, and then I started actually writing poetry.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. I self-published two books of poetry shortly thereafter, after I left A&T. But it was interesting. It was great. It was a great experience. It opened my mind up to the world, you know. And it teaches you something. It teaches me like stepping outside my comfort zone and going into a different environment. It's much more important. It gives you so much more experience than reading about it in a geography book or taking a class on human psychology or some English class or something like that. So it was just being around something I've never seen before was the greatest learning experience ever. And that actually kicked in the idea that, hey, maybe I should travel more, and which is something I was able to accomplish later in life as well.
Mm. Yeah. So what did you end up studying over there?
I was an accounting major at first. I had to back out of accounting because I got behind. I was running back and forth to Asheville to see my son, and I was partying because A&T, they know how to party. So I was partying. And then I got behind in accounting. And once you get behind, it's almost like the snowball effect. It's hard to catch up. And me going back home to see my son, things like that was very hard, difficult to catch up. And so I got out of accounting and changed to business management.
And you graduated with a business management degree?
Not immediately. This came probably, I finally got my degree in my 30s, maybe 39.
Yeah, it's better than never, man.
Yeah. And I would take one class at a time because it's like, you know, I'm not getting financial aid. I'm not getting any grant. So I'll save up enough money, pay for one class, pay for that book, and then just take that course. Next semester, do the same thing next semester, you know. I always try to have money on reserve because I'm a father. I just, in case we have a setback, the car breaks down, something like that. It was just really about, this is my ultimate goal. I just want to go ahead and accomplish this degree. But eventually down the road, I knew I wanted to do plumbing, which the degree became irrelevant in a sense, but it was still a goal of mine. So I strive for both eventually.
Mm. Now, I know before, you know, you got into the plumbing, you said you had another job for about 13 years. So what did you do prior to plumbing, and then what was it that kind of got you? Sprint.
Yeah, I worked at Sprint. Sprint, they had a cell phone company. Yeah, I was in a call center. And first I started off on the phones, and eventually became a mentor, eventually became a part of the management team. And then Sprint actually turned me on so much. I learned a lot there because I learned to, we always had trainings on how to identify a person's behavior. So, you know, if I'm teaching you or coaching you, I have to learn your learning style, you know? And so I needed that. And then, so also I learned how to build rapport with people and just naturally get people to try to open up. I became very good at that. They would send me to places to teach others. And so I started traveling to like Washington. I went to Boston. I went to Seattle. I went to Texas. And then I went to South America. You know, they were opening up call centers there in South America and Central America, Bogota, Colombia, Guatemala. I've been there. Didn't know that I was training people to replace me, you know? So if really? I'm making, so you know what I'm saying? So if I'm wow. making, say I throw a number out, say if I'm making $18 an hour back then they were saying, then they say, you know what? Let's open up a call center in Bogota, Colombia, and pay them $5 an hour. And then, wow. and plus they're bilingual. And then, but yeah. And so the site that I worked at, the call center that I worked at, eventually was sold to another company. And we still did the same work, but at that point in time, morale had started to sink. You know, so right. morale was sinking, the unsurety and job security, that wasn't there. And so I knew it was time for me to get out of there. You know, the different things were changing, incentives were changing, the opportunity to travel, that was changing. And so it's just like, you know what, I wasn't happy anymore. And then our father passed, Maya and I, our father passed away. And then at that point in time, I was like, you know what, let me get out of here. It's just, life is short. You start realizing, right. you know what I'm saying? When people die or sickness or something like that happens, you start realizing that, you know what? I've been here 13 years and I don't feel any closer to satisfaction to, you know what I'm saying? Or finding my purpose in life. You know, entrepreneurship has always been my thing. I've always had dreams to, but I just hadn't found my niche, you know? I do art as well. I paint, I illustrate, do poetry, but oh yeah, yeah, but I just
our artistry's in the family, huh?
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And then, but Maya was so amazing with that. He actually was. I was starting to in Asheville doing a tattoo apprenticeship with him, but it's just that was his thing, you know. Right. That was his baby. And so, and then all my life it was kind of like, you know, you're working in under your big brother's shadow, and you know he shined everywhere he went, and so it was almost like, let me just kind of redefine myself. And
yes,
so
sir.
Maya went yes, to Atlanta. Sir. I stayed in Asheville and then went to Greensboro and Charlotte. And then you find out what works for you. And then we actually became.
I think that's how it should be, man. Shout out to Mr. Maya Bailey, by the way. But we here with Damian Bailey. I think yeah. that is the way to go. Because I think sometimes when you are under like greatness, there's so much mm-hmm. pressure there. And you can be great. Yeah. But if you're not as great, people be like, well, he's not quite.
Yeah.
You know, my like same thing with where yeah. we see like, you know, athletes, like professional athletes, and then, you know, father and son, and the son will come through and they're like, well, he's not quite like his father. He's good, but he's not, you know, like, I think it's just not right, man. You know what I mean? So I do believe in whoever coming under, like finding their own niche and being great in that, so that there's no, you know, comparisons and you don't got to be like self-doubted and all that stuff. Cause people are like, well, he's not as good as his older brother, or you know, as his father, or whoever, like, yeah. So I'm glad you found your own niche. But what kind of got you into thinking about plumbing? I mean, you were in college. You know, people generally don't have like people that generally are in college don't have that mindset of like, yo, let me go and work with my hands. And then you mentioned before too that you didn't have anybody growing up that you would do handiwork with, or you know what I mean? Like building stuff and whatever else. So what kind of made plumbing into something that, you know, would be a good idea for you?
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know I was applying for a plumbing position. So again, my father died. I was unhappy working in management with Sprint. Then I started looking for other jobs in management, actually. Like if you have people skills, management skills, I was putting that in Indeed.com, and then I just start filling out applications. I don't even remember filling out the application for plumbing, but I know I had an interview and they said make up to $80,000 a year. So I'm like, let's do it. And And so I interviewed for it, and the guy was like, yo, you tested out the waters on the, you know, the test, you know, some, I think some, it was some math on the test, maybe some personality tests, things like that was included on the assessment. But he said, this is a plumbing position. I said, hey, yo, I've never worked. I didn't know what a pipe wrench versus a adjustable wrench. I didn't know what anything was. Wow. But the thing is, at my advantage, I learned fast. And he, and the guy told me, he said, I think you're actually overqualified because of my management background. And I said, well, let's do this. Let's give it a shot. And then he told me, well, I started you off at like $12 an hour. So I was probably making around $25 an hour with when my, I include my bonuses in the management position.
What year was that?
Was it 7-8 years ago? Seven years ago?
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe 2015.
Okay.
So I took, like, you know, really maybe like the 50 to 60% pay cut. But I got them to where if I show improvement, let's put it on a tier system, you know? And so he gave me a shot. The guy, and there was a plumbing company in Asheville. He gave me a shot. I owned a house here in Charlotte. And then so I had to move to Asheville for a couple of years, and I, you know, commuted back and forth. But I rented out a little trailer in Asheville, man. I was staying in this little trailer and learning plumbing, working 50, 60 hours a week. And I budgeted. So once I found out about plumbing, I did the research. I knew that it could be a cash cow. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to stack my money. First, I got mortgage here, and I got to pay rent at this trailer. So let me get that. And then anything else, I'm going to stack. And I, once I knew plumbing, and about three or four months into it, I knew I could do it. I just like, okay, what are the requirements for me to get to become licensed?
And that, then they be that, saying they, that whole thing, I think before the license, that whole thing is fascinating to me because, you know, I'm I didn't, you know, grow up doing too much handiwork either. And I can't see myself learning plumbing in like a year or 2 years. Like, were you doing like handiwork or anything like growing up at all, like nothing at all? And you just
probably
up...
my biggest accomplishment was probably changing my brakes, and I learned that off YouTube, you know. So I was on YouTube, like, let me see how to change brakes. Oh shoot, I think I can do that, you know. Let me see how to change the thermostat in my car. So I would go out, go to Walmart, buy a couple of tools, maybe go to Lowe's, buy a couple of tools and a part, follow the video to a T. And then so I knew I could do it.
Right.
I don't know if I, again, the moves I make, I've always been very calculated, and I can't remember like being failing at too much of anything. You know, I may not hit the goal in the time that I wanted, but I just don't remember failing because I'm so persistent and so just well thought out as far as my plans. Right. And so, yeah. So no skill level whatsoever. No skill level whatsoever.
So were you like messing up a lot in the beginning? Like, how did those beginning phases look like, man? Like,
You leave, and then you know you get a call that evening, like, yo, you put in this faucet and it's still leaking, you know. And I may be at a customer's house at the beginning, and then I'm stuck, and so I say, okay, let me run to my truck. I'm gonna go get a few tools, and I go to my work truck. This is after my 5 or 6 month apprenticeship, where I did just a ride along with someone.
Right.
But I went to my workshop and I would look at YouTube videos on how to fix this pipe, how to solder properly, or tips on how to unclog this drain, you know, if I got stuck. But my apprenticeship was pretty good. I had some good guys that were teaching me. I had some assholes, you know. I had a guy that he just wanted me to. As soon as I go to the truck and get me a screwdriver, I go to the truck, get a screwdriver. As soon as I come back, okay, now go get me a wrench. Go get, you know, so he was trying to, like, I'm going to be tough on him, almost like a hazing, like, thing when you join a fraternity. It's almost like he was hazing me or something. Like, I'm going to make it hard for you so you can appreciate the position. And I'm like, right. So I'm just like, yo, man, I'm not learning from you. You know, I'm not learning anything. I'm just running back and forth to the truck. And then, and by the time I get settled, you fix the problem and I haven't learned anything. So that But once I got on my own, I was aggressive. Like put me out there, let me try. And then if I get stuck, it was YouTube or a phone call. We didn't really have FaceTime going on like that back then. So.
Right. And then how did you transition into getting the master plumbing license and everything? Like, what did you have to do in order to, you know, to get that certification?
I needed 2 years of experience and, you know, maybe like, I think it was maybe 4,000. It's so many thousands of hours that you need to get under your belt. 2 years of experience under a master plumber. Once you do that, you can become a licensed plumber. So you can become a journeyman, which is you just do the plumbing aspect, or a master plumber, which is the plumbing aspect and the business portion of it. It's a 5.5 to 6 hour test also that you have to take to become licensed. What was crazy is soon as I hit my 2 year mark, I went for my plumbing license and got it. So the people that were training me, they've been plumbing 18 years, you know, but the thing is, the test is no joke. It's almost designed to trip you up with the verbiage and whatnot. And I'm gonna tell you the truth, sometimes you got these good old boys, redneck plumbers, you know, and because it's not a industry dominated by, you know, educated people or even black people. So you got these good old boys, and not talking crap about them, but some of them they're not that book smart, but they're good. They can fix anything in this world. They're amazing plumbers. But when it comes down to a 6 hour test, that's just strictly based on academics, mathematics, the business law, things like that, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. And so I don't say, but I mean, I told them.
So a lot of these guys didn't have their master plumbing license.
So they have to work up under someone their whole life. They can't branch out and start their own. And so, after my 2 years, I hit the test and then I became a master plumber as far as on paper. Now, if you ask another plumber, they're going to be like, yeah, but you still only got 2 years of experience. They'll bust your balls every chance they get, in a sense. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get respected when you're considered a master plumber and you've only had 2 years of experience. And some of these jokers have had 16 to 25, 28 years of experience, you know?
Right.
Looking at you
like a baby, like you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, you're still an apprentice, you know. But you prove them wrong. And so once I became licensed, you know, you pay your fine, your fees, and you pay you become licensed. Left Asheville, came back to Charlotte, and said, you know what, I'm gonna work in Charlotte for 1 year just to learn the demographics. Asheville was very different. You deal with a lot of mountains, and just the terrain was different. They have well water in Asheville. There's not as many wells here in the city of Charlotte. And so I just wanted to learn it. So I worked with another company here and then did it for a year and eventually got out on my own.
Right. So you just mentioned too that there aren't too many black folks in the wonderful world of plumbing, you know? What would you say the numbers like how many like black folks do you come across? I know there's probably barely any black women for sure, but how many black folks do you generally come across? And then what's been your experience like going into settings where people are not expecting to see a black man and like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you're the head plumber in charge. Like, this is your company. Yeah. Like, so what's been that experience? And then like paint that picture for us of like how many black folks are in this industry really.
Yeah, I would say as far as license, I say, because there's a lot of handyman. There's a lot of black folks that can fix stuff. But when it comes down to adhering to the North Carolina code or plumbing code and things like that, they may not know it. So maybe 5%, I would say, maybe African-American or black, or even a person of color that has their master plumber license. And so when I go to these workshops, I always try to further my education. I go to workshops, seminars. I'm often the only black, you know? I've even been encountered with some situations where they're so comfortable with not having black folks around. I heard a guy telling the story. So he's telling me a story and he was like, I sold a car to a guy, da 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 da. And this is at a plumbing workshop. I'm the only black, right? And he tried to beat me for the car and sell me a lemon and some, and no offense, Damien, but you're cool, but this guy was a nigger. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, yo. And so the room got quiet in a bit. So I found he was 19 years old, right? 19 years old, young kid. We went to our chairs and then, everyone left. I called him, you know, after he said that, we kind of dissipated. And I said, look, man, if this guy beat you or sold you a lemon or hustled you, call him a hustler, call him a thief, call him anything else. That has nothing to do with nigger or whatever. I said, man, I started to knock out all the front of your teeth. I started to just knock the shit out you, man. But I know you're 19 and I have a 19-year-old son and he's stupid too. You know what I'm saying? Because I said, you're 19 and stupid. You don't know what you're doing, man. But the only reason is because you're young and dumb, and that kept me from knocking out your teeth, man. And he said, man, I apologize. He apologized and whatnot. But a couple of people came and said they appreciate how I handled it. But so my son is doing an apprenticeship under me, and I had to let him know, like, look. So he was born and raised in Charlotte. I'm born and raised in Asheville, and I've been exposed to racism. So you don't develop a tolerance, but you know when you should fight and when you should wait your turn. Again, it's about me being calculated with my moves and whatnot.
Right.
And so I let him know, like, son, you're going to encounter some things. You know, you're going to encounter some things. I'm going to send you to this workshop in Minnesota, and it's going to be 200 people. You're going to be the only Black in there. And I need to show you how to conduct yourself. And you tatted up. And you got dread. You know what I'm saying? Mm. You know, so yeah. It's, we're always tiptoeing. We're always trying to go above and beyond. And that's why we have a super strong focus on customer service, because it's hard to trust. Some people don't trust, you know? If media and the news promote even young Blacks, and I tell him he's 25. I say, you're a young Black man, you tattooed up, and you got dreads. And this morning on the news, somebody robbed the store, and guess what? They were young, they were Black, they were tattooed up, and they had dreads. And now you're coming into this person's home. So I just had to teach him how to just walk different and maybe even have a conversation with people and how to build rapport so that he can create some comfort with him being in the home, you know? And right, people already right. question him because of his age and being young. They're just not used to a young Black man doing things like that. But it's definitely difficult. Maybe about 5% of maybe the plumbing world or around here at least are Black. And there's some sections where I'm the only Black licensed plumber, period. You know?
Man, I mean, that might be good for business too, man, if some Black folks want to support, you know?
So it sells.
Yeah. Yeah, to be honest,
when after the murder of George Floyd, there was a conscious effort to support Black businesses, right? Especially here in Charlotte, which is, it just has a lot of the Black population is strong here, or Atlanta it would be. Business flourish. And then they see a father-son combination. You know what I'm saying? Yep, Black father-son. I mean, business, it boomed. And I mean, it's been great ever since. It was good before, but now it's like, you know, you can wait 1 or 2 days before we can get to you. Now it's like, you know, you have to wait a few more days sometimes. But business, it's amazing just because of the conscious level of support, you know? We just started supporting each other, you know?
Yeah, that is dope, man. That is dope. One thing you mentioned is just being in meetings and being in situations with, you know, a lot of white folks around and how they act. Mm-hmm. What about going into white folks' houses? Have you ever had like, you can't come in here, like kind of thing? Or what has been your experience going into the house?
Yeah, stepped out the truck. You know, sometimes people will come and meet you at the door. You know, as soon as you pull up, they'll open up the door for you and whatnot. I stepped out. He said, I need another damn plumber. And then so as I'm talking to him, he combated everything I'm saying. Like in this situation, he had a super old kitchen faucet that would not stop dripping. It was so old that the screws wouldn't come out of it. And I was like, you know, I can't fix it. Oh, I'm going to try to break it, trying to take it apart. So he's like, you're just trying to sell me something new. And he said, look, and he challenged me at every corner of my presentation of me trying to tell him, hey, your faucet's bad. He just said, and he told me I need a new plumber. He demanded that I show him my business card to show that, and I was working for another company at that point in time, my business card. And while I was there, he called the company and asked them to send him somebody else, preferably. He didn't say a white guy, but he said, I want somebody else, you know? And that guy came out and kind of, recapped what I stated, and he allowed that man to finish the job. But Yeah. But then on the flip side, I went to, it was a white guy's house that his front window was a Confederate flag just posted up on the front. So when I'm walking into the house, I call the office like, look, I need you guys to just be on the lookout for my call, because just in case something happens, I just want you to know where I'm at, and I'm pulling up to John Brown's house or whatever, whatever. I walked in the house, and again, I started plumbing after my father passed. I'm trying to build rapport, telling him that's a nice boat you have on the, in the garage. Da, da, da. He said, yeah, my father gave it to me, but he just passed. And I'm like, yeah, my father just passed. And then next thing you know, we sat there and talked for like an hour and a half, just chopping it up, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah. So I've had it flip, you know, Confederate flag in the car windshield and on his window at in the living room. He was cool. I had another guy that, no Confederate flag. He looked like I don't know if you would call it a church going American, and, mm-hmm. and he didn't want any parts of me, you know?
Mm. Very yeah. interesting. Yeah. So you kind of transitioned from, working as for somebody, you know, in the plumbing company, and then learning mm-hmm. the ropes, getting taught by somebody, and then doing it on your own, hitting up the YouTube mm-hmm. videos. At what point yeah. did you feel like, yo, I got this? And then from, yo, I got this, when did you feel like, yo, I got to do this on my own, or I can do this on my own? And walk mm-hmm. us through like the process of you setting up the Wonderful World of Plumbing and kind of going out on your own and to do things on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. After about a year of my apprenticeship, I knew I could do it on my own. After that, I just knew it. But I just needed to finish my apprenticeship. After I did the apprenticeship, I moved back to Charlotte and worked here so I can learn Charlotte and learn again the area. I had been saving the whole time. I have a thing that I call it the peanut butter sandwich. So the peanut butter sandwich is where to stack money, I just ate all the time. Either I make a big, huge pot of like ground turkey spaghetti, because I didn't eat beef or pork, but I ate ground turkey spaghetti, and then I would just eat on that for a week and a half. Or for weeks at a time, every day for over a year, I made eight peanut butter sandwiches for lunch. I wasn't going out. I wasn't going to restaurants. I wasn't pulling up to a McDonald's for a fish sandwich. I wasn't, every penny I could get that I would just stack and save, because I knew what the greater goal was. So I ate peanut butter sandwiches, man. And then by the time I got to Charlotte, I had mortgage and rent, mortgage in Charlotte, rent in Asheville. By the time I got to Charlotte, I had like $10,000 saved up. I was working for the other company. And then I became what I consider the top guy or the go-to plumber. And I was training new people, teaching them our system at the company I was with, how to adhere to their rules and policies and their strategies and things like that. And then one time, about a year into it, I had already started creating logos. So I drew out the logo, like what you see in the background, I drew that out, had it just like I wanted it, printed up business cards and whatnot. Then I was like, I didn't care for the logo. So I talked to Maya about the logo, and he was like, yeah, I could draw it, da, 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 da. But Maya was so slammed. And once I have something on my mind, I need it like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Maya wasn't about to punch that clock. So I talked to my brother, Mr. Soul, a dope graphic artist. He was down in Atlanta. Now he's in Ohio now. So Mr. Soul took the logo, man. And he made it amazing. He made it attractive. He made it eye-catching. And then, and we've been rolling with that ever since. I ended up trademarking it. I ended up ordering uniforms. I was still working for this other company now. I ordered uniforms. So I would work for them from maybe like 7 to 5 or 6 p.m. This is after a year of being there. And then after 6 p.m., I go home and then I put on my uniform. And sometimes I'll drive in my personal car and go take a call, or somebody else needs plumbing, I'll take a call. Under Wonderful World of Plumbing. So I was training someone, and he had the flu, and he gave me the flu. I was out of work for like a week and a half. And I'm like, you know what? I'm missing out on money. The way they had it set up, if I sold $10,000 worth of plumbing, I would get 20% of that. So that means I get $2,000 from that. And so I'm already thinking like, man, this $10,000 would be much better than $2,000. You know,
yeah,
I'm doing
yeah,
all
yeah.
the work. I'm converting the calls from being a potential sale.
That's
to
a wild percent. That is a really wild yeah. percentage considering the amount of work that you're doing.
Yeah.
And the company
yeah.
is pretty much getting you, I guess, the customer. And then you're doing the work, the labor, and you're only getting 20%.
Everything. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. When you go, when you knock on that door, it's a potential sale. So you do have to, sell it. You have to sell yourself, you know? And so, I just like, yo, the percentages are crazy. This is stupid. I can, instead of working for 2 weeks, what I'm making in 2 weeks, I can make in 1 or 2 days if I get 100% of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so dude gave me the flu. I had that, you know what I'm saying, probably a little over $10,000 saved up. And I was in the bed sick. I got on Facebook Market and I found a work van, a white work van. And I talked the guy to selling to me for like $4,500. Mm-hmm. Then I found a guy that does vehicle wraps. So he played with it and he put this the logo onto the wrap. And then I already had my uniforms, my hats. I had everything else ordered. So I had two trucks at my house. I had one work truck for the company I was working with, and then I had the Wonderful World of Plumbing work truck. I parked that work truck and then eventually started getting into my truck and running calls at night for Wonderful mm-hmm. World of Plumbing. And so it was almost like I was working two jobs. And then when I got back from having the flu, I was really good with the manager at the company I was working with, and I didn't want to leave him hanging. I knew I was the top guy, so I said, I'm gonna give you a 30-day notice instead of a 2-week notice. Gave him a 30-day notice. And after that, it was history. You know, after that, Wonderful World of Plumbing was started. And yeah.
That's amazing, man. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So let's imagine, you know, I'm listening in. I'm like, yo, this is amazing. You know, young person, young black kid maybe listening in. He's in the North Carolina area. And he's like, yo, I want to work for a black man, you know, doing Wonderful World of Plumbing over here. Like, what do you look for in a worker or even an apprentice if you do any apprenticeships or anything like that? Like, what do you look for to have somebody come on and be a part of, you know, the work that you're doing and pretty much your baby, essentially, man? That's what, you know, your company is.
Absolutely. I like to hire and do an apprenticeship where I'm teaching them sometimes from the ground up. Like my son did an apprenticeship. He just taught them from the ground up. And then they've been young. My apprenticeships have been my son, who was 22 when he started. I have two nephews. One was 20, one was 19 when they started with me.
Sounds like a family business brewing, man.
Yeah. And it was. It is. And so, and it's really, do you have that drive? Like, hold on. This is the first question I ask is, are you trying to make money? Are you want to learn plumbing or just make some money? And or do you want to learn this to have it as like a career? If they say, I just want to make some money, like, you know, because a lot of people want to be hired. Like, can you just hire me? I just need to make some money this summer. I can't do anything with that. You're not going to learn anything in the summer. And then it doesn't help. It doesn't benefit the company at all. I need to train somebody to put them in a truck to send them out on their own so I can have 4 or 5 trucks circulating through Charlotte to make more money. And so it doesn't help the company at all. So I just need somebody that wants to do the work and that's not just looking for a check. Like, if you want a check, just go to Amazon, you know what I'm saying? go to Fed. But if you want to do this, then come on. And then you have to know how to just conduct yourself around people and just be nice. And then after that, I can teach you plumbing, you know? Because that's what the guy told me. He said, it's plenty of people that know how to plumb, but I can't teach them to be nice. You know what I'm saying? But I can take a nice person and teach them plumbing. And that was the whole reason behind hiring me, because I didn't know a thing about it. And so with my apprenticeships, so far it's been young black, I don't want to call them kids, but young black adults, you know, and that's who I've been focused on, because I just want to give that opportunity to someone who's never even thought about something like plumbing, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you're diversifying the field, man, which is excellent.
Absolutely. You know, and it's good money in it, you know? You can go to somebody's house that has a clog. I'll tell you how I break it down to some people.
Right.
I had $30. I bought a flyer. This guy designed flyers. I threw a party. I gave the guy $30. He designed me a digital flyer for a party. Threw a party. I made about $600 at that party at the door. used that $600, bought a $600 drain machine, mastered the drain machine, and now just if you have a clog, that drain machine on average makes me either $300 and something dollars or $400 and something dollars every time I pull it out. It takes me about 20 minutes, you know, 20 minutes to snake out a drain line. And kit. So I took $30, turned it into $600, turned that $600. And now that machine has lasted me years. And you, and I get drain machine calls almost every day. And every day that machine is paid for is making $400, $300, $400, $400, $300, $300. And so that part of it's all profit, you know, it's all profit. Because again, the machine is paid.
That's
same thing. Yeah, you can buy a, like a toilet auger, but we buy a quality one, and it maybe say it's between $60 and $80, and you charge $150, $180 to clog out somebody's toilet when the plunger's not working and they can't get it. You know, so you pay for that. It pays for itself on the first job, you know, and then you use it for the next several years, and it's just all money. And so plumbing, profit margins can be really high in plumbing because if you have to have the right tools, you know.
Mm. One thing I heard, which was kind of funny and interesting at the same time, during Black Friday, during the Thanksgiving period, you know, people was eating like crazy and, you know, toilets be getting clogged up. I heard that's like y'all day of the year is just like when you
get eating. Yeah. the smell of money, you know. So I'm gonna tell you, when things start jumping, holidays, and people are making calls out of desperation. Families here, something's going on, a leak happens or a clog happens. When the pandemic hit, toilet tissue had a shortage. People were just flushing anything, flushing wipes, flushing cloths. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So we were so at first business dropped about 30%, but then clogs came, and then we were just had to kill them in clogs because they were at home. They can't be at home. It's not like they can go to the gym and take a shower or use the bathroom or something like that now. So they have or get a hotel. Some, you know, just the money wasn't available or sometimes hotels had been closing. So they had to get it fixed. And so plumbing industry started bumping. It started rocking. Clogs and things like that became. And then eventually there was a little balance in the economy. And then people start saying, you know, I'm home. I want to change out my faucets. And then people start upgrading. And then we start really, really thriving maybe a few months into the pandemic.
That's amazing. So I know like what we just talked about, you know, you're using the snake and clearing clogs up, like that might be an easy day. You make a few thousand dollars that day. Walk me through a hard day, man. Like what is a hard day in a day of a life of a plumber?
Yeah. What's crazy is the same thing. The same things that come. That's why we have a thing where we don't say, okay, it should be easy. I'll be finished in and out. Because as soon as you say that, it's almost like you jinx yourself a little bit, you know? And so it's really up to your discretion. My thing is digging, you know? I can crawl up under a house and fix a leak and do something like that all day. But I hate digging, you know? And so that's a hard day. And sometimes you have to dig several feet deep. Sometimes if there's a leak under the ground, you have a pipe that's maybe about as thick as your thumb, right? But then the whole ground is saturated. Digging mud is really difficult, and just trying to find that pipe 2 to 3 feet deep into the ground, and it's just about the size of your thumb, is just sometimes it's difficult to find out the exact location. So you have to dig excessively. That's always a hard day. I love the challenge part of it, to where we have to figure out, like, in plumbing, sometimes you use formulas, math formulas, to find out angles and slope and drop and things like that. Because again, pipes, it's an old saying with plumbers, excuse my language, they say shit don't flow uphill, you know what I'm saying? So whenever you flush a toilet, every pipe in your house is always graded downward so gravity and water can take it on out, and it goes downward until it gets to the sewer, and then it drops into the sewer with the city. Just figuring out how to slope things the right way, how to vent pipes the right way through the roof, and how to make all the plumbing interconnect. It's a challenge to some, but that's the part of the academics in plumbing that I appreciate and that I love. I love that challenge.
Got you. I was checking out your Instagram, man, and you be seeing some wild stuff at work, man.
Yeah.
Snakes, spiders, frogs, turtles. Like, what's the What's the wildest thing that you've come across that's on the job like that, you know, that you'll never forget?
A couple of situations. So sometimes you go up under the house and it's pitch black, right? So you have your flashlight, your phone flash, whatever you can use. I kept smelling something smells dead up under here. Something smells dead. And you always have your snakes, you know, and snakes and spiders are like typical. That's every day. That's just as common as a leak or in some areas.
Man, but, you might have turned some people off right now. From
I know, right? So I'm laying on my back and I'm fixing a pipe under my head. And I'm like, yo, something's in under my back. And I'm thinking that it's a rock. And it was like a skeleton. It was like a possum skeleton or something like that. And it was rotting. And I was sitting there laying on top of it. So that grossed me out. But I'm gonna tell you the truth. Only thing I did, I take some dirt, cover it up, and lay maybe a piece of cardboard over it, and I lay right back on top of it and fix the leak, you know.
Smelling money.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was in Asheville and I was fixing a faucet, and I went outside to my truck. I ate a peanut butter sandwich. Before I walked into the customer's house, I finished off my peanut butter sandwich. And a black bear came up on me. Whoa. So this was in Asheville with two cubs. And so I was in the back of my truck getting a couple of tools out, and I jumped out the back of the truck and ran to lock myself in the front. During the process of running, it was almost like a scary movie. You know how somebody takes off running, they trip up and fall, and the monster end up. So I tripped up and fell. Luckily, the black bear didn't come after me, but it was a mother bear with the two cubs, and I knew that she could have been aggressive. Locked myself in the trunk, and then the mother she walked past with the cubs, and then she just started chewing on grass and flowers. After a while, she wouldn't go anywhere, so I opened up the door and just slammed it shut, and then the bear took off. I didn't think the cubs got startled, took off running by the loud bang, and then the mother took off running. I fixed the faucet, and I eventually went home and ended up going to the doctor because I sprained my ankle during that time as well. So I was on crutches for like a week. But yeah, the black bear. And then it traumatizes you, man. That being in Asheville and around black bears plumbing at night, sometimes people leave out their trash on trash day. They know when trash day is coming. And so it's been times where I pull up to a house and they're like, you just missed the bear, Damien. And all the trash cans in the cul-de-sac on the street are knocked over, you know? Bird feeders, things like that. They are attracted to the seeds and the smells of the trash on trash day. So you just have to really be cautious.
That just turned me off right there. And I was contemplating plumbing. I'm like, damn, yo, plumbing.
The spider snakes are pretty common, you know? Seeing snake skin, but not knowing what a snake is. That's pretty common, you know. Pretty common. You're like, where?
How do you deal with the snakes? Do you just let them be, or do you move them? Like, what do you?
You make a lot of noise. If you make a lot of noise up under the house, like you walking by, you maybe bang the pipe or bang, you know, your tool against something. They'll pretty much stay hidden, you know. And they don't want altercation, but there's been a couple of times they come out on me, and like one house, I went up under there. There was maybe like six snake skins. And so we knew that there was a snake infestation, and I had to repipe the entire house. So I was going to be up under there for like 6 or 7 hours. And so I partnered with the customer and I said, well, we'll call Terminet. We'll pay for half and you pay for half. And the customer said, cool. Terminet couldn't find any other snakes. And so after about 7 hours, I'm doing some soldering with the torch, some copper piping. Here comes the snake. I guess we went around the whole house and it's coming out the hole. The exterminator left us a sticky trap and and something to grab the snake. You know how like old people have the thing they can pick up trash? It's like this.
Yeah.
So he gave us one of those to grab the snake, but this joker was strong. So I grabbed it with that. I couldn't get him on the sticky tape. He was too strong. And so I grabbed him, held him long enough, and I just hit him in the head with the hammer. No. I didn't have the hammer. I hit him with the torch because I was soldering. I didn't have the hammer. I had the torch. And so I hit him with the torch and I fried him, but he was still moving. So then I hit him with the hammer. But I would have tried to kind of stick him on the sticky paper, but because you get used to snakes. But this crawl space, it was one that was so low, like you couldn't even get up and crawl on your hands and knees. It was almost like a military crawl. And wow. It's no escape. If he starts striking or something like that, it's no escape. And so it's almost like one of us got to go. So,
yeah. That sounds like a scary movie, man. A horror
it
movie.
Does. Right it there. Does. It felt like one at the moment. It felt like one.
Yeah, man. That is interesting, man. Definitely interesting. Yeah. All right. So aside just from the plumbing, man, I know that you had a stint where you dealt with a bout of cancer. So what was that like, whole experience like? And I know you mentioned that changing your diet kind of helped you, recover and get through that whole process. So can you walk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was right before my 1 year anniversary of having Wonderful World of Plumbing. Diagnosed with cancer, and the signs that I had were it was blood in my stool. Like, so every time I went to the bathroom, there was blood came out when I had to do a number two, blood and mucus. Mucus was coming out. And so I got checked out eventually. I let it go a few months, got checked out eventually because it started progressively getting worse, I think I became like extremely, I had a sensation like I had to do a number two all day, every day, but like nothing was there but except for blood. And so I got checked out, and turned out to be cancer. Did a colonoscopy, and it turned out to be cancer. And again, that was scary, right? So I had an uncle pass from cancer and an aunt that passed from cancer. So now I'm like, yo, I don't know what to expect. And so they talked to me about surgery and this and that. And my biggest thing is to hang up is I didn't want to a colostomy bag. Cause I'm like, if I have a permanent bag, on the side of my hip where they were talking about, not to get too graphic, but rectum.
Get graphic. It's
sewing, yeah. They were talking about sewing my rectum closed and giving me a permanent bag to use the bathroom in. And I didn't want that. I'm like, yo, I feel like I'm still young enough to enjoy life, and I don't want to go to the beach. I don't want to be crawling up under a house and a bag gets snagged on a nail or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it busts open, and then I just like, I don't want to do it. And then so I started researching. One of my brother's little sister actually sent me I call him my brother, one of my best friends. His little sister sent me some information on Dr. Sebi. She sent it to me pretty quick, and I kind of just put it to the side because I was first dealing with the emotional trauma behind finding out that you have cancer, that I had cancer. And so I chose the path of with the doctors to do radiation for 5 weeks, and I took a chemo pill. It's not common that you do both at the same time, but the pill will enhance the effectiveness of the radiation. But it's all toxic. You see what I'm saying? And so it's almost like, bleach is a strong cleaning solution and so is ammonia. And when you mix it together, that shit becomes super toxic. So I was taking that and it was becoming, and again, I could feel it. After about 4 weeks, I could feel it changing my body. Like my hands were getting black. They were getting really dark. The radiation was causing, it was in my rectum. So radiation was going around my waist, and it was causing my buttocks and my hips to get really black from the radiation. Let's see. I could feel the 20 minutes after taking the chemo, I could feel it in my body, and it feels like it's weakening you. It feels like it's killing you. It feels like it's like everything is just crumbling and becoming super weak, So that's the part about cancer. You feel like you're going to die from the treatment. You know what I'm saying? Like I wasn't in pain when I had the bleeding and things like that. Some people are in pain, but I wasn't in pain. But the pain came when the radiation was hitting, and then it's tearing up everything. The chemo is making me feel like I had the sensation that I had to pee all the time, but it was just the radiation hit my bladder while it was attacking the tumor, and then it was weakening that muscle. It even came to a point where I had to talk to some other people who had cancer, because I'm like, you can't hold your stool. So, and to be honest, the most embarrassing part of it, and I talk freely about it now, is having to wear like a Depends for like 2 to 3 weeks, because it was just making me so weak in every muscle around that area, so weak around my waist. And then emotionally, when you're confident, when you're like, I've never had a broken bone before. You know, I've never been hospitalized or anything like that. So when you feel like you're broken down to the point where you can't even hold your stool, man, it does something to you. It does something to your pride. It does something to your mind. And so the chemo and stuff is known for, it will break you if you don't have a strong will. But I knew I had an uncle and aunt that passed from it. And so I knew I didn't want to, after I did 5.5 weeks of chemo and radiation, I had a two-month break. During that 2 month break, to where I had to let my body strengthen back up, get some normality about everything. Looking up to Dr. Sebi. And I reached out to one of my friends who's a vegan, because I didn't know anything about being a vegan. And she gave me some amazing information. And then I ended up just trying it out. And so then I started detoxing. Another friend was telling me detox. So I'm cleaning my body. I'm drinking spring water, alkaline water. I'm taking everything, high alkaline vegetables, kale and dark vegetables, dark fruits, green things that are really green, pumping it in my body every day. Lentils, fiber, anything that just sea moss, elderberry, vitamin D, dandelion root. So I'm just researching. And every time I do research, I write down every suggestion that was being offered by this particular website.
Right.
Once I find about 10 different sources, I compare the list, and whatever kept coming up on the same list, like the most common thing, which, you know, sea moss, detoxing, foods that are high in alkalinity, you know, and carrots, things like that. I took those and I just bought all those ingredients and I would take it every day. They say take one vitamin. I took two vitamins, you know. And then again, every week I detox. So I did lose probably about 15 pounds. I went from like 205 to 190. I may have been able to do 70 or 80 push-ups without stopping at that point in time. But then after that chemo and radiation, I couldn't even do 10. And so it was I needed to strengthen up. But after I took radiation and chemo, I strengthened my body up, started detoxing. 2 months later, we did something called a FlexSig. It's where they check, and it's really, they use their finger and they check to see if they feel a tumor. My tumor, if my rectum is a hole, my tumor is maybe an inch away from maybe my anus, you know? So it's almost like the doctor could stick the tip of his finger in and they could feel it. Mm-hmm. So he did it. He couldn't feel anything. So he ordered a colonoscopy. Did the colonoscopy, no more tumor. Wow. This is after three months, you know? And so he's saying, looks like the radiation and chemo is working. I'm saying, looks like the plant-based diet and the detoxing is working. I said, I truly believe that what I was eating a bunch of junk. You know, I was eating food that can be stored on the shelf for a year, you know. If I buy it today in a grocery store, it expires in 2024. You know what I'm saying? So right. I stopped eating that and started eating more things that are natural. And then I never detoxed. And then I just never flushed my body. And I think just bad foods were just sitting inside my body, which I feel like that caused the tumor. And so I said, if what I ate caused the cancer, then what I eat can stop it, you know? And so they didn't find the tumor, but the doctor wanted to do more radiation. I know he wanted to do more chemo. But first he wanted to operate still and give me that bag. I said, but there's no tumor there. But he's like, well, so he's like, Damien, but you know, you still got cancer cells in you. I said, doctor, you can't cut a cell. If you can make it make sense, I'm on board. He couldn't make it make sense. He wanted to do surgery because it keeps him employed. It keeps him making money. But I'm like, yo, if the surgery was there to cut the tumor out, there's no more tumor. But if I need to knock out,
operating.
There's no more cancer. He want to operate on cells. I say, well, you know what? I'll do another bout of chemo and radiation. He said, well, you can't take more radiation, but let's prescribe chemo. We're going to give you three different chemos, and we're going to put a port in your neck for 6 months. I said, I just did 1 month of a chemo pill. Give me that shit again and I'll take that. He said, no. I said, but why are you maxing it out if only thing we're doing is polishing off the last cells, right? He's getting offended now. He's like, Damien, I think you can cure this yourself. I said, well, doctor, have you cured it? I said, how many of your patients have died? You know what I'm saying? I said, only thing you're doing is what they're doing according to the books. I said, I said, I'm not doing any surgery. Figure out a plan for me to do more chemo and radiation. And I was saying that because of my family. My family was like, yo, what are you doing? This is crazy. You have to do radiation. You have to do chemo, you know?
Man.
And so he couldn't explain why he wanted to max out the chemo, insert a port in my neck and pump chemo in my body for 6 months. He couldn't make me understand why. If what we did in 5 weeks and what I did for the last 2 months with my diet, if that took away the tumor, I just need to repeat that and take away the last few cells. So he couldn't make it make sense. I stopped everything cold turkey. After the 1 month of radiation chemo, I said, I'm not listening to anything else you say. A couple of months later, I did another colonoscopy. They did a biopsy. Biopsy said they couldn't find any more cancer cells in me. Wow. And my main driver, you know, I said, doctor, you ever been broke? You know what I'm saying? So this is the thing. Wonderful World of Plumbing was my opportunity to create generational wealth for my family. Mm-hmm. I said, rather than being sick for the rest of my life, you cut me open, the risk of it spreading and killing me off. And next thing you know, my family's left with excessive medical bills. And I'd rather die in 2 years, teach my son plumbing in these 2 years, than to live at handicapped for 15, you know what I'm saying? Or however long I could have lived. I put it all on the line, because if I do this now and I lose Wonderful World of Plumbing, I haven't hit 1 year yet, I just felt like the business is going to tank. The business is going to go downhill. They say, and it's like, you know, you can always get your business back. Da, 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 da. Man, listen, you ain't never been broke. This is my golden goose. But this is my opportunity to leave generational wealth. So I said, I sacrifice myself if it means that my son can carry this on and then train somebody and pass it on to his son and then create a bigger picture or create a larger company. So I said, I'd rather sacrifice that. And so we did what we call a watchful wait. The biopsy said no more cancer. He was an a-hole after that. I said, yeah.
Can you imagine a doctor that's supposed to be like, yo, this is what it's supposed to be about. Mission complete.
Yeah. Absolutely. So people, when I walked in the doctor's office after the, you know, no cancer cells found, people like, congratulations, you did it, da, 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 da. And then one nurse came at me and wanted me to mentor other cancer patients. So then the doctor said, I heard you have some good news. I said, yeah. So I'm smiling, I'm proud. He said, well, you know, it's a 65% chance that it's going to come back. That's the first thing you said to me. I said, you know what? I said, I haven't fit the profile of nothing that you've studied. I said, I was right after chemo, I was in being plant-based, being eating clean. My body was just, it came back stronger. You know what I'm saying? It came back so much stronger. And healthier. I said, I could run a 3K right now. I can run a marathon right now. I can go into the gym and lift this, you know, where I couldn't do that before. This is the strongest I've ever done, you know, in the gym. I said, I would challenge you in anything physically right now. I said, but everybody else in that weight room that you're treating, they lost their hair, their own walkers. One guy, he was getting radiation of chemo, the skin on his neck was peeling. Wow. People have the chemo and radiation give you blisters. It tears your body up. It tears your body up. And so I just like, yo, doctor, you haven't cured this. I'm not going to put all my, I said, you know what? If what I do did doesn't work, then I'll do chemo and radiation. I'll do it. But what I end up doing worked and it proved them wrong. So, yeah. So I do an annual checkup, an annual colonoscopy, but I don't go back to that doctor anymore.
And, I was just about to ask that.
I do a checkup just to make sure I'm clean and I'm good. And you know, that was 3 years ago. Last year, the year after, and actually a few months ago, I did another checkup and I'm still clear.
Dope.
And
that's amazing.
And the business is, now it did slow down business. We talked about that $1 million goal. That slowed down me from reaching that goal, because I was planning on reaching that goal a lot sooner than I did. I hit it after about 3.5 years. I hit my $1 million goal. And I wanted to hit it after my second year. But the cancer came and that was a hindrance. Then COVID came the following year and then that was a hindrance in 2000. And so I hit it. I still hit it. And I'm proud of that, but just not as quickly as I wanted to.
Absolutely, man. Amazing story, by the way, man. Have you been able to keep up with the plant-based diet?
Yeah. Now, right after I was deemed cancer, where they couldn't find any more cancer, because you can't really say cancer-free unless it's like 5 years after, you know, technically I say it now, I claim it now though, but I started going back to chicken, you know, just chicken wings, man, just like honey barbecue chicken wings and blue cheese dressing, man. I couldn't give it up. But then I had to just get back into a circle of people that were eating healthy and that could turn me on to new foods. And I just had to really get back into meal prepping. Meal prepping is, because I was on the go, working and trying to launch, make Wonderful Wheel of Plumbing grow.
Right.
I was going nonstop. And when I was going nonstop, you kind of eat on the go.
Mm-hmm.
And even 3-4 years ago, the option for plant-based wasn't out there. It is now, you know?
You're right. Yeah.
And so now, you know, I can pull up anywhere, even on the worst day, even though I'm not a big fan of it, I go to Burger King and have to get an Impossible Burger, you know, if I need to. But now I do a lot of meal prepping now just to stay on top of it. And, because I do find that there's a lot of anxiety before I go back to the doctor. You know, you can't get past the fear of it coming back. You know?
Yeah, the trauma.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, and to create the stop the anxiety, I just got to make sure I'm doing the right thing. Because then I'm like, yo, I wonder if I just didn't detox enough. You start questioning everything. I wonder if I ate that, then would that bring that cancer back, you know? And so, yeah. But everything's been A-okay. I've been staying on track. And now it's just a lifestyle, and I've learned to live with it. So, I mean, I live with the just being plant-based and staying the course.
Yes, sir. And kudos to you for kind of going against your doctor, because I think another situation right here where people would have been like, yo, I'm going to trust my doctor. You know, he studied this. Yeah. He went to school for this. He's been doing this for a long time. I don't know nothing about medicine. I'm going to just trust my doctor, even though my body's telling me something else. I'm going to trust my doctor.
Yeah.
So, you know, kudos to you for sticking with that, man. And I think there's a lot of those stories where, you know, people might be in the same position as you, but they might just be like, trust that white coat. You know what I mean? And just.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, doc, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And might not live too long after that, man. So, you know, again, kudos, man, for trusting yourself and trusting the evidence, not just the lab coat, you know, the white coat.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I've had people often, you know, ask me to coach them through some things, but they've like, oh, man, I can't give up steak and macaroni and cheese, man. I love it. And I'm like, well, good. Well, shoot, I'll let me when you can. Well, you know, enjoy it. Enjoy steak and mac and cheese, man. But enjoy that cancer though too, you know, if that's the case. I'm just saying you, if you've eaten like this your whole entire life, just try to change it for 3 or 4 months, you know what I'm saying? And what I found, if I say change your eating habits for the rest of your life, people become intimidated. Right. They feel like they have to give up chicken and steak and things like that for the rest of their life. They are intimidated. Now if I tell them 3 months, then during those 90 days you create the habit of eating plant-based or eating clean, and then you feel the difference in your body. And so and then you have a choice, like, you know what, I see the results, I'm experiencing the results, I'm staying on it. And then a lot of times people won't go back. They won't go back to eating unhealthy and eating a lot of processed foods and things like that. But if people ask me for some help, I have a little outline that I might text them or email them of the things that I did. But I'd be like, look, once you read this book called Chris Beats Cancer, look at these YouTube videos called What the Health, Game Changers.
Yes.
Yeah, C is for Cancer. Look at those movies, read that book, come back to me, and I'm going to take you to lunch, and we're going to talk about everything else after that. And I'm going to tell you the truth, maybe one person has followed up with me out of maybe 50. And I've had maybe 5 friends die, and people that I've met and interacted with die because the cancer became progressively worse. And I'm like, again, I don't know if what I did would work for everybody, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I just knew my body. But what I'm saying is you can give yourself a fighting chance, you know. You can definitely
absolutely
give yourself a fighting chance.
Absolutely. And speaking of What the Health, Dr. Greger in that documentary, he makes a bold statement that he says, nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. You know what I'm saying? So when people talk about, man, that fried chicken, the honey BBQ, nothing tastes as good as healthy feels, man. And, you know, I think if you fast forward anybody's future into like that bout with cancer, man, they'll be like, all right, I'm done. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it, you know, I think we really got to start thinking like that, man. And not repeating, you know, the generational diseases, you know, my aunt had it, my uncle had it, my father had it, my mom had it. Don't mean you got to have it. You know what I'm saying? And all of that, the link between all of those things is eating patterns, man. You know,
right.
They used to say genetics, but we know better now, you know? So we are eating in the same way. So super important, man. I'm glad you shared that with us.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. Going back into the wonderful world of plumbing. I don't know much about plumbing, you know, but sometimes you get these little things that happen at home. You're like, can I fix this real quick without getting a plumber?
Yeah.
You know? So what do you think are like some fixable things that somebody could do that you might go to somebody's house? You're like, man, they could have done that. You know, now they're paying me a few hundred, you know, or, and then what's some things like, nah, don't even think about it. Don't even touch it. Don't try to do it. Don't, you know, so where are we at with those things?
Yeah. Don't touch it. When you have metal pipes that are leaking, like soldering, you have to cut open the wall. You got a pipe that's leaking. You have to put a torch and solder and melt pipes together in the wall. I've seen people almost burn their house down. It's a skill that, you know, you have to learn how to angle flames and how to get your pipe to reach 400 degrees so the solder can take things like that. A lot of things that deals with water, I would not recommend. Now, things that you can do, if your toilet is running or something like that, and you know, when you flush the toilet, you push the handle down, it has a level in it that lifts up the flapper. It's a rubber flapper, looks like a disc on the inside of that toilet. And that all the water goes into the hole that the flapper is covering. That water flushes the toilet and whatnot, and then it flushes whatever you just did in that toilet. And so, so that flapper becomes old and because of the chlorine in the water, it may become tattered, just time. Maybe that'd be natural wear and tear. But you can do that yourself. You just peel it off. You know, the flapper is connected to two little things, almost like a coat hanger. I call it like a coat hanger. You hang a coat hanger up on the rail, kind of like that. And that's how the flapper is attached to your piece in your toilet. Take it off the little hanger and then put a new one on the hanger. And then, but people be like, nah, I'm not a plumber. I can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to really be a plumber to know how to do that, you know? Sometimes they have a leaking pipe under their sink. And the only thing you have to do is just tighten a nut on it. And I'm not a plumber. I said, but okay, let me ask you this. Do you know how to twist off a water bottle? And they'd be like, yeah, that's how you do it. You twist off water, you grab the pipe like this and you just twist it tighter, you know? It's not any a plumbingness to it, but little things like that. But when I suggest people to try it themselves, disposal gets jammed up. Sometimes you just press the little red button to reset it. Some things I tell them to do it themselves. I will text them a YouTube video. Same way I learned. Text them a YouTube video, like, follow this video. If you can't get it, then give us a call. We'll come out. We charge $50 to come knock on the door, and that $50 will go towards, you know, it'll go towards the repairs that we do. But if you have us come knock on the door and you say, nah, never mind, then, you know, we charge you that $50. But again, if you can press a button.
Which ain't too bad compared to what other companies be charging.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, I've learned, because of my business model, I've learned to eliminate a lot of overhead. And so since I don't have a ton of overhead and I'm not in debt, then I have bigger profit margins. And then with that, I don't have to charge, you know, like company like Morris Jenkins, say they charge $3,000 for a task. I may charge $2,000, but Morris Jenkins, my profit margins are actually still larger than them on that transaction because they have huge facilities they pay for. They have, they market on, at, you know, the Carolina Panthers game. You see Morris Jenkins around the billboard. So the customers have to pay for that, you know? And so it's going to reflect in the price you pay for the same task that we do. But again, we're small, but we get plenty of business and our overhead is low, which means our profit margins are really high.
Mm. Yeah, that's dope, man. That is dope. Just for you, like, do you do your own plumbing at home, or do you just be like, nah?
Yeah. I called my son to do it. But, you know, it was one time my garbage disposal went out, and, you know, we were so busy with plumbing, it took like a month and a half for me to change out that garbage disposal. And it probably takes 20 minutes for me to do it, you know. But just the fact that once you get home, you want to just, you don't want to take any tools out your truck. You don't want to do anything. So, yeah, I still do it, you know. Unclog the toilet, things like that, if something happens. But I'm not as quickly. I'm not on it as fast as I am if I get a call and the customer calls me with an emergency. Yeah,
right. So I'm guessing you've made this million off of great customer service and you know, doing wonderful work. As far as the profit margin that you were mentioning, with making a million, like how much of that goes into the business? How much of that is profit? Just so we get an idea.
Mm-hmm. So the average profit in these in companies are between 8% and 12%, the profit margins of what you make. So if you make $100, then of course you everything is insurance, trucks, overhead, materials, edit, you know, payroll, everything comes down. Then you may have 8% to 12% of your profit margin. My profit margins are more like maybe 30% to 40%. My biggest expense are payroll, because I like to make sure my employees are happy, you know, and then my employees are my family. So what I've done is we came to a crossroads where something happened in the family and I had to cancel all the appointments that day. I forgot to call one lady and she gave me a bad review saying that I didn't come to her house and I left her hanging and blah, blah, blah.
Which could be deadly. Which could be deadly.
It could. It can. So I reached out to her. I told her what was going on with the family. Just put a, you know, gave her a text like, hey, we're a small company. Something happened internal. And then she understood. And I said, whatever you want to do, I'm going to do it at 50% off. Came back, did it 50% off. She was happy. She changed the bad Google review. Mm-hmm. But now I had a problem that I needed to resolve. I can't be in so many places at one time. So my mom was unhappy where she was working. I asked her what was she getting paid, and then I said I can match that. So and the only thing you need to do is if the phone rings 10 times throughout the day, just answer it. See if they want to make an appointment and schedule the appointment. Get our iPad and the phone, and we just made it work. And that freed me up. Before, I was getting so burnt out, I may close my day around 2 o'clock. Right after that, I could put forth more energy into plumbing, and now I'm not rushed. I'm not, and now my I can make more money per transaction, or and I could even work a little longer because I'm not dangling from in the attic or dangling from a ladder or climbing up on the roof answering the phone like, hey, this is Damien from, you know, Wonderful World of Plumbing. How can I help? I don't have to do that now. I can focus only on this job, and so it was a lifesaver when she wanted to transition from her job, and she came along, and now she. She's an employee of Wonderful World of Plumbing. And since it's my mom, I'm not going to pay her scraps. So I'm going to make sure that everybody's happy and the job is easy as possible. And then my son, he's a huge asset. I can't do it without him. And then so I make sure that he's well compensated. So that's my biggest expense since I don't have the same overhead. Yeah,
that is dope, man. Again, kudos to you for incorporating the family in there. And again, building generational wealth, man. Everybody is in, man, instead of working a 9-to-5 and working into somebody else's business and dreams. You know, you work into your own family's business and dreams. So that's dope, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. I kind of wanted to get into a quick little activity here called What's Your Favorite? Identifying a few of your favorite things. So we could be brief, or you could elaborate if you would like. So what are some of your favorite tools? With plumbing tools?
Probably the drain machine, you know? But the drain machine is probably the most profitable. That's why.
Money machine.
The job. Yeah. The job can be done. And sometimes it could take a long time if you have a stubborn clog. Sometimes the job can take 5 minutes, you know? And what you end up finding yourself doing, if you resolve that issue in 5 minutes, but we charge a flat rate. Whether it take me 2 hours or 5 minutes, it's going to be the same charge, you know. But I'm not going to charge you extra if I ended up having to do more and it takes me 2 hours or it takes me 3 days to do. I'm not going to charge you anymore. But if it takes me 5 minutes, I'm not going to charge you any less either. So you agree to the price when we establish it. I get you working and I warranty it. And then I get them to sign off on it. So the drain machine is probably that and the sewer camera. So it kind of works hand in hand. When we snake out a line, we can charge them and then we can put a camera into the sewer lines and you can see what's going on underground. And sometimes a lot of interesting things are being revealed when you do that.
Well, what you gotta share now, man.
soiled underwear that wow. somebody maybe flushed, adult toys, you know what I'm saying? Like people flush it, man. They think they can flush anything, you know. Toys, of course, you know, toys are really pretty common. But like things
it's
like
probably
that.
Kids,
you know what people ate for dinner, you know. You always see corn. You snaking out a line, you always see corn floating around somewhere in those sewer lines. You know, because it don't digest. It doesn't digest like
interesting,
that.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's your favorite plumbing hack?
Now give me an example. When you think, say hack, you know, because like we call hacks that... like bootleg plumbers.
Yeah, like something that generally takes a long time that you could just like not, I wouldn't say cut corners, but you know how to do it real quick instead of like taking like 2 hours on something. You might take like 10 minutes on it.
Probably unjamming the garbage disposal. Say we charge $100, you know, to unjam your garbage disposal. But sometimes it takes 3 seconds. If you got the right tool, it may take 3 seconds to unjam it. Now, how do you justify a customer giving you $100 for 3 seconds of work? And sometimes you can't. And so to accommodate the customer, sometimes, you know, just a plumbing secret, and this is with every plumber, not just a, you just might have to sit there and just keep tinkering with it, make them, you know. But you know what? Because there's an old saying, though, that, you know, a ship broke down and nobody could fix it. So one old guy came in with a hammer. And he listened to the motor or the ship, listened to it here, listened to it there, and he tapped on it in one spot, and then the engine kicked on and started working again. He charged him like, you know, okay, that'd be $100,000, right? Like, the only thing you did was tap on the engine, but it's not what you did to fix it. It's the knowledge that it took for me to, and the years and years that it took for me to know how to fix it like this, you know? And so, when you fix something quickly like that, they don't appreciate the fact that it took you years to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm fixing, cutting open the wall and fixing the leak inside the wall, I may do it in 30 minutes. But I mean, if you caught me 4 years ago, 5 years ago, it may have taken me 3 hours to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could appreciate the efficiency and how I've saved you a lot of time out of your day to where now you can go to the grocery store. Now you can turn your water back on. You know, you don't have to go half a day without water. So you can, you know, and just the skill level that it took for me to do it that quickly, it comes with a price, though. But yeah.
Great point. Mm-hmm. What's been your favorite, like, go-to resource for, like, information and just updating your knowledge on your craft?
Plumbing forums and group texts with other plumbers. People that I know that are the plumbers, we have we text in a group. It's like three or four of us. And we always run things by each other. The plumbing forum, that's more cutthroat, you know. Mm-hmm. But you can get a lot of information. And then workshops and seminars, you know, you can see what's new and upcoming at the workshop and seminars. Sometimes you go into these plumbing forums and these old school guys want to keep everything old school when there's a much easier way to do it, you know, right. And a much faster way to do it. Just inventions and innovation, you know, hit the plumbing world. And these old guys are like, nah, that's not the real way to do it, you know. But yeah, you know, you reinvent the wheel a different way and it becomes, it makes your job a lot easier.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do to kind of get away from the job, man? Get away after a long, hard day's work and just relax and de-stress?
Travel. If I can get a weekend, I don't have anything to do, I'll get in the car and I'll just drive somewhere. I'll look up, hey, I Google, what is there to do within a 45-mile radius? And then, so one time I did that, I was in Asheville and I drove to Tennessee and there was an Alex Haley memorial, kind of like a park. And it was a huge giant statue of Alex Haley. I went to visit that, took some pictures and whatnot, paid my respects. And then I was like, I'm not finished. So then I said, you know, what's close? And then I saw Birmingham, Alabama's close. And so then I went to the church where that was bombed, where the four little girls died. So I just jumped in the car, drove there. Then I'm like, okay, now it's getting late. So I drove to Atlanta and spent the night with my brother, then drove back home the next day. So look, things like that. I'm known for, it may be a Friday. I may get, and my brother always picks on me. Maya picks on me because I'll spend $200 on a cheap flight on Spirit Airlines. And I'll fly to California with a book bag on, like two pair of shorts, two t-shirts, two pair of underwear, and some Crocs. And, you know, and then I'll just go to California for 2 days and go and maybe visit Hollywood or something like that, get a hotel or Airbnb, and then come back Sunday and go back to work, you know. So little things like that's my getaway. That's kind of like my thing. It's just jump on a plane with a book bag and go somewhere, come right back.
Got you. Speaking of getting away, man, I know you mentioned you've done some traveling on the job, off the job. What's been some of your favorite places, man, that you've been at?
South America. I met some amazing people, and I turned it into a plumbing trip a couple of times where I helped this little village get well water to their homes, and you know, you run the water lines to their homes and whatnot. Yeah. But I went there just to chill. I had been there to work when I was working with Sprint. I made a lot of friends down there, and then I went back a second time and ended up discovering a village that needed some help, and I started working that, digging trenches to, you know, to divert rainwater from washing away, where they live, because they were almost living in huts. But I've been in Guatemala a couple of times, about 2 to 3 times, but I just came back a week and a half ago from Ghana, and that was amazing.
Dope.
That was amazing. Yeah, that was good for the history and just kind of like just checking out my roots and finding out just more about myself and us as a people, you know.
What'd you do in Ghana?
Sweat. Man, it was hot. I looked up purchasing land there. And looking up getting a citizenship because they're offering citizenships.
Yeah,
it's starting to boom there where traveling and things like that are becoming more common. So I know that I can buy a place there for an amazing price. But I went to the slave dungeons and the slave castles to where they have the doorway of no return. It's like the last door that the slaves went out before they boarded the ship to the New World. There I took a flight from Accra to Kumasi in another city, learned the origins of the Ashanti people and how they and kente cloths and the origin of kente cloths and just ate the foods that they ate, which was super spicy, and just walked around and got tours of the museums and learned about the history. It was amazing. Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, man. Can't wait for my trip.
yeah, it's worth it.
Yes, sir. Speaking of some Black history and some Blackness, I know you're a heavy reader, man. So what has been some of your favorite books that you've come across?
Lately, they've been business books. How to Win Friends and Influence People, books by John Maxwell, Dale Carnegie, like The Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I just forget his name.
Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah,
everybody talks about that book.
Yeah. And then, you know, he has other books like about your financial, increasing your financial IQ and things like that. So, but the How to Win Friends and Influence People, 7 Habits of Highly Effective Leaders, just things about leadership, how to persuade people, books like that. The How to Persuade People is really about when I'm at a house and I need to tell them or maybe convince them that this is what they really need to do. You know, and it's about overcoming the objection. If they're saying, I don't want to do this, I just want to do that. And I'm not really trying to sell them plumbing, but if you truly need this, I need you to understand that you truly need this. But this just gets me comfortable with trying to be persuasive in my approach, you know. even how to approach people with a presumptive approach. Instead of saying, hey, would you like me to change your water heater? I may say, hey, you know, your water heater's old. I'm going to go ahead and give you some quotes so you can go ahead and get it changed out, okay? And so it almost naturally, your approach is say, okay, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you lean in more towards getting the work done. But yeah. So those type books on how to really grow the business and become really effective and how to run a business and be efficient.
Super important reading to improve self-improvement. I feel like sometimes we get into the reading for entertainment, man. Same thing like we do with TV, man. Self-improvement, I think, is definitely the way to go because why not read to learn how to make more money, how to be better communicators, how to be better with people and all that, you know, all that kind of stuff. Not just to entertain yourself or whatever it is. So definitely understand
that. Absolutely. I don't have cable. I have Wi-Fi, but you know, I have the apps where I can just maybe Netflix or maybe look at Bel Air on Peacock or something like that. But yeah, I don't do cable, so I want as least many distractions as I can tolerate, you know.
I hear that, man. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about vegan eating and what's been some of your favorite vegan food?
Lately, there's a new Black-owned vegan restaurant now. It was a food truck before called Romeo's Vegan Burgers here in Charlotte. So they just launched their restaurant and they have some amazing food. And then what else, man? I love lentils. Like it's a 15 bean and lentil soup that I created that when I was going through cancer. Just something to be that's fulfilling, that's high in fiber, that's high in protein. And then I start playing with it. I chop up kale, put that kale in there and just have green carrot, things like that. And it's almost like a stew. But that is still one of my favorites because it's fulfilling and it's just the good foods that I need to put in my body. And I'm gonna tell you the truth, I'm not this big health nut because on the weekends I will award myself and I may just indulge in some a whole brownie or cook a pan of brownies and eat the whole thing. I love chocolate.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. That balance. It seems like you know you're doing a good job with that. We all got our cravings and all that. Lastly, of course, I got to ask, man, I know you're a family man. What's your favorite thing to do with your family?
It's eat, really. If we can put a movie on and just sit around and eat or something like that and fellowship. My dad used to say, let's break bread, you know? Mm. And it's nothing. Whether we have a drink, wine, or whatever you own, and just eat, you know? I've never been big on things like holidays, Christmases, you know, the gift giving things like a Valentine. And it's really about if it's my birthday, don't buy me a thing. But if you come over, let's everybody come over to the house and let's get some food, you know. And it's just those type of things are what creates memories and just family, just get together, you know. That's what it is. No excuses. And I love just family outing.
Yes, sir. And speaking of family, man. As far as the legacy of the work that you're doing with the wonderful world of plumbing, the work you're doing as a father, and of course, as a Black man and everything, what is the legacy that you are looking to leave behind?
My thing is, I just don't want my family, I don't want anyone to try to get it the easy way. You know what I'm saying? Like hard work and again, being a good person, people can see through the bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, and if your energy is not right, sometimes they can notice that. Some people notice that when you go into the house. You go into the house of some people and they're really spiritual. But just really the legacy I want to like if people can say that, you know what, Daniel was a good person. He was a strong leader. He wasn't a quitter. He was successful in a lot of his ventures and he was family oriented. That's all. And of course, a lot of things are geared around money. I would love to make sure that my family is good forever. But it doesn't mean a hill of beans if they don't have the core values of just being a good-hearted person. I truly believe karma will come around and eat your ass up. You know what I'm saying? if you don't live right, so
I could definitely sense that, man. I could sense the energy, man. That your energy. So I could definitely sense what you're, you know, alluding to as far as being a good person and everything, man. So lastly, man, we usually ask guests before they leave us, if you could leave us with your favorite quote and what it means to you?
And then just love is an action word would be probably my favorite quote or my favorite phrase. But and it shows whether it's Wonderful World of Plumbing doing a sponsorship, helping pay for some kid to play football or school books or uniform or sponsor someone around the holidays, or whether it's me jumping out the car, pushing, you know, a car off the side of the road that's broke down, you know. I know that we put in water heaters for free for an elderly woman that, you know, that hasn't had hot water in 8 months and she just couldn't afford to do to pay for another one. I feel like you just got to pass the blessings along. So really nothing shows love like love, you know, and love is an action word. So don't just say it. It's really about be about it. Whatever you're talking about, just be about it, you know, stand behind it. Stand behind whatever you're doing. So love is an action word, and you can show it in many ways. So.
That makes sense, man. That makes sense. Yeah. And I think it takes people with that mindset to make the world a better place, man, because a lot of us, you know, say it, but don't stand behind it as far as action goes. So definitely Absolutely. Understand that.
It becomes a reflection of who you are. So, yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Before we dip out, I kind of wanted to read my favorite Damian Bailey quote, man, on your Instagram. I peeped this. So you said, Dear Street Pharmacist, yesterday, I snaked out a sewer line. It took me 20 minutes and I made $400+. I didn't have to watch my back, risk getting killed, or risk going to jail. Man. And I feel like that speaks to your younger self as well, too, man. Like you speaking to your younger self. And, you know, dudes out there that's just getting it the hard way, man. You know, so that yeah. definitely stuck out with me, you know, with the work that you're doing, man. That, you know, there's you know, hustling ain't an easy job at all, man. You know,
yeah.
You've had that experience, yeah, and a lot of you know, young Black men deal with that, man. But there's other routes out there, you know, that you can get this money even better. You know, even better, safer, absolutely. Easier. That just sometimes we just don't know, man. So hopefully,
absolutely.
You know, hopefully some. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the same kind, you know, in the streets, high risk, high reward, right? You take a lot of risk, try to sell off and get this package off, and you make that money quick and easy. But plumbing is high risk, high reward. You can make, you know, nothing, zero. I can start the day with nothing in my pocket, and somebody can call, two or three people can call with a drain call, and that's when, you know, I'll come home at the end of the day with $2,000, and I've only worked maybe 20 minutes on each call, you know? So it's high risk, high reward with plumbing too. Because plumbing is not, I'm gonna tell you the truth, it's some dangerous parts of the day, you know, where you can crawl up under a house and you next thing you know, a brown recluse spider is taking a chomp out of your leg or your arm. Now you got a spider bite and an infection and you're swelling up or something, or a copperhead snake. You know, I've been in places where copperheads were in a crawl space, and so it's not all peaches and cream, but. It's definitely been running those streets and watching your back for the robbers or for the coppers or for whoever else that may see that you're getting it the fast way. You know, there's a lot more risk than that.
Indeed, indeed, man. So if you ain't afraid of the spiders and the snakes and the bears and everything else, I feel like we tigers, bears, snakes, oh my kind of thing.
I know, right?
You ain't afraid of all that, man. Plumbing is where it's at, man. Sounds like you're fulfilled. You're making good money. You're enjoying yourself with your family and everything is going well, man. So there's a lot of ways to find satisfaction in what you do. So definitely appreciate you bringing that side to us today, man, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
For those that might want to know where to get in contact with you, maybe they might be in the North Carolina area or just to pick your brain a little bit about some plumbing, where can they find you?
You go to the website, just go to wonderfulplumber.com. There's a contact section where you can just send an email via the contact section. Wonderful-world-of-plumbing on Instagram or Facebook, Wonderful World of Plumbing. So, but the website is wonderfulplumber@gmail.com and then Wonderful World of Plumbing on Instagram and Facebook.
There it is. There it is. Listeners, thank you for listening. I would definitely share the program, share with people that you think might be interested or, you know, just want to know about what's happening with the hands-on things, because I think this is stuff that we have to pass on to the youth. A lot of us are selling that you got to go to college and get your degree and use your, some of the kids, they don't want to be in school, man. So we have to present them with other options and, you know, hands-on things and things that they could do. So plumbing is definitely one of those options. If you are dealing with a young person, or if you're a young person yourself and you don't know where to go, you don't want to go to college, start looking into these crafts, man. They still here, even though the schools are not promoting them, they still here. So definitely share the program so our communities could be aware of, you know, these things and these skills and the requirements and what we got to do. And that there are Black men like Damian Marley doing Damian Marley. There are Black men like Damian Bailey doing his thing, and successful in a white space. So appreciate that, Damian. Thank you for everything that you do and the work that you're doing. Listeners, share the program. Let's continue to help the wonderful world of plumbing become even more successful and more well-known. And of course, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I will see you next time on Mastermind.